As we head into spring and cities from London to Tokyo begin the path to full reopening, vital questions of how we'll travel within them and between them are being asked. To answer these questions, in the coming weeks, the chiefs will be talking to executives in the travel and hospitality industry for their outlook and business strategies for 2021 and beyond. We start off today by looking at a major player in the mobility market. Though long overshadowed by its four-wheeler friend, the motorbike and scooter are now ready to share the limelight. Having asserted their utility during the pandemic as a safe and agile personal vehicle, despite the dominance of the bicycle, they offer an increasingly sustainable solution to individual mobility in our densest cities. And as we return to normality, the two-wheeler looks sure to capitalize on these assets. With an exciting new model en route, there's one player leading the charge. Joining me today from the company headquarters in Munich is Edgar Heinrich, chief designer at BMW Motorrad. He walks us through the development of the sexy new model, the CE04, innovative design processes, how this new model might fundamentally alter the market, and how to balance BMW's incredibly broad consumer needs. I'm Tyler Brulé in Zurich, and this is The Chiefs on Monocle 24. Edgar, first, thank you very much for joining us. I've been wanting to speak to you and certainly, or at least someone senior from BMW Motorrad for a while, because I have this burning question. There has been so much attention over, you could argue, the last decade, but certainly the last 5 years in particular, of course, about mobility, in particular e-mobility. And it's been the car that has been the star of the show. There's been, of course, so much focus on what is happening, you know, in terms of battery technology, et cetera, et cetera. And I've always sort of scratched my head when I've been in Taipei, when I've been in Bangkok, when I've been in cities which have a lot of two-wheel motorized vehicles, wondering, where is the motorbike? Where is the scooter in all of this story? And I'm wondering, maybe, you know, as someone who is, of course, overseeing design and creating desirability, what's happened? Has the motorcycle been left out of this somehow?
I mean, that's a pretty complex question, first of all. I think the first reason probably is you have to differentiate between, let's say, the what I call the Western or the matured markets and maybe the third world markets or the emerging markets like India or Taipei, what you just said, or China, or this kind of thing, where two-wheelers is actually really about mobility and the need of mobility, like utility. And it's a very different two-wheeler mobility situation in, let's say, like in Europe or in America, where it's more about leisure time and fun and emotion. It's basically a luxury thing here. I mean, you might know, I used to live in India also, and two-wheelers is perceived pretty different there. But things are changing there also. So this is the first thing. If I look at these, let's say, first world markets, of course, you're right that two-wheelers is actually not so much in the focus, which has to do with, I think, the big business, of course. The bikes is like a small universe, kind of, and it's more about leisure time and the luxury thing and not so much about mass mobility. And this is why the, let's say, the politics is not really dealing with motorbikes. Because it's a microcosm, it's just like, whatever, I don't know, like 1% of all the emissions and stuff. Actually, in the bike world, here in Germany or in Europe, we are actually more dealing about the noise regulations instead of the emissions. And secondly, also, that means the regulations for bikes are always a bit lagging behind the cars. We have the EU5 now and EU5 plus to come and 6, and we don't even know what will come there. So that's kind of the situation. But on the other hand, of course, and this is an important thing, I think, I personally believe two-wheelers can play a very big role, an important role in future mobility, especially if you think about congested areas like urban areas, cities like London, which are locked down for four-wheelers and for ICE engines and stuff. I think two-wheelers can really make a big thing there. If you look at southern cities like Italy, Rome, Barcelona, two-wheelers have a very big part in this because of their small footprint, because of the good weather conditions. I think this is a big thing, yes, to come. And then the next thing, of course, is, like I said, two-wheelers will play a big role, first of all, in urban environments like scooters and stuff. And this is where we are already working on.
I'm going to come back to, of course, one of your recent launches, the CEO4, which has had an enormous amount of attention for what is a concept vehicle. And it's interesting because it's just that, it's a concept and you're playing a bit of the, in a way, the car game. It's one of those interesting reveals that really, I think, fired up even people who would never really think about this type of mobility. Anyway, we'll come back to that in a moment. What I'm hearing, though, is really a land of opportunity. And you talked about congestion. Now, of course, you have a lot of urban leaders, you have a lot of mayors, burgomeisters who think, okay, the future of mobility really comes down to getting people onto another type of two-wheelers. Let's get them onto e-bikes. Let's get people onto the S-Bahn. Let's get them onto buses. Let's get them off of four wheels. Do you see an opportunity, though, within that, or even a danger, though, that the scooter or the motorcycle is going to get left out because everyone is so focused on the bicycle? And no one's really seeing also the positive sides of also having a faster, more robust two-wheeler in all of that as well.
Me personally, especially in Germany, you're right, we have this lots of these discussions about green mobility and getting people on public transport, which is fair, which is good, of course. But I think there is always a very inherent need in people to have individual mobility. I think this is like a primary need of people in itself. And it has always been through all the ages. And then again, especially in Germany, I mean, people are very, not only in Germany, but people are very focused on these cars and bikes and stuff. Actually, the COVID thing proved that people are really willing to do this and they don't want to sacrifice in all this. We have people on the lands, on the flat land. I mean, they need a car. They need some means of transport. There is no buses. There is no trains. And again, the two-wheelers can play a big role there. You mentioned the CEO4. I think especially in urban areas where the infrastructure is already there or it's going to be built pretty soon, scooters or utility mobility can do a big share there. Everywhere we see bicycles here, and I think bicycles and two-wheelers, also motorbikes, they are kind of the winners of the pandemic situation here. That's very interesting to see.
Again, let's save time for the CEO4 because I want to also make sure that I get a test ride on one when it's possible. But let's go back when you mentioned Southern Europe. I want to also focus on this topic again of congestion and mobility. If I think of two cities where there are very smart commuters, one is, of course, is in an emerging market, a rapidly emerging market. I think of Bangkok and I think of there of people who have their scooter or their motorcycle driver because they need it. They might want to ride around on the BTS, but the BTS, the Bangkok transit system, doesn't take them where they need to go. So they don't want to sit in traffic. They need to use a motorcycle. And of course, you might have your dedicated bike driver who you call up and away you go. And then the other side is a city like Paris, where to get out to Charles de Gaulle, if you don't want to miss your flight, again, you're going to want to jump on a motorcycle. It's a bit of a hairy ride. And there the two-wheeler fills that in. In a way, Edgar, do you have to almost complete the dream for people and also show them where a motorcycle makes sense today, where, you know, a more powerful scooter makes sense? Because once you show them and people are like, wow, this has absolutely changed the way I navigate around a city. So it's not just down to BMW Motorrad. I mean, it's also all of your competitors as well. Have they almost, has it been too much of a focus on leisure and sport and saying, actually, what we should do is really focus on being part of the solution for a bit of an urban problem?
The standard motorbike, let's say, in our world, is a leisure thing. And of course, it's used for commuting and so, but it doesn't fulfill the practical needs that people have. I mean, you want to go shopping or you want to be, you know, you want to ride around in town and all this thing, and you don't want to get dirty. And so this is actually where the scooters come in, or the utility two-wheelers, what I call them. And I think the problem on these standard scooters, what we all see in these southern cities, in Italian cities or in Spanish cities or also in France, there is lots of these utility mobility scooters, basically. But usually it's not perceived as cool. It's more like rational, yeah? If you look at these typical scooters, they don't look very emotional. They look very practical. They look a bit lousy. You sit on these things with a big bench and you look like almost 10 years old, yeah? So the point is, with what we tried with the CEO4, you want to combine the utility factors. You want to also make a statement. That means you want to have an emotional bike. And this is what we try with the CEO4, that you dismiss all these typical let's say, old-fashioned formal language, like with this sports bike look, you know, with these dragon lines. No, we tried to keep more of an urban architecture, like almost a product design looks, in an emotional way. It's like an SUV or like a SAV bike. And this is what we tried. I mean, you combine the utility, you have luggage compartment, you have wind and weather protection, you have connectivity, all that stuff. But you also make a statement when you ride through the city. And I think this is a way what we think we should go.
I'm wondering, was there a lot of research that went into this, or was this really off the designer's screen, off of a collaborative meeting with a series of designers? Because to our listeners who haven't seen it, I would encourage you to go and take a peek, because you've also solved one of the things I've also sometimes struggled with when I've thought about motorcycle design, which is, you know, a bike will go past you quite quickly, but sometimes you're not sure. Was that a Honda? Was that, you know, was it a BMW? Was it a Suzuki Kawasaki? Whatever. It could be any number, because, you know, you've got two wheels, and of course you have all of the various industrial design elements you need, and some bikes are sexier than others, but oftentimes you can't really tell what it is. You've completely overcome that. You know, to me, it's like now there is really a design signature, certainly with the CE04. Was that also part of it, or are we seeing, and maybe you don't want to give a state secret away, but was part of the thinking behind this as well, that it is unmistakable, and this now becomes part of a new design language we see elsewhere with the BMW Motorrad lineup?
I mean, electric mobility will come. It's a thing you cannot deny. So we also said, for us in BMW Motorbike, so we have to deal with it. You like it or you don't like it, that's not the question. We have to work with it. And then we said, the first step will be in urban environment, like I said before, because of infrastructure, because of the typical urban traffic, like stop and go, you accelerate, you decelerate, you can recuperate. So the range is going to extend it. The range is anyway not so big in these urban areas. So this is all speaking for electric mobility first coming up in urban and suburban areas. And this is usually commuting and leisure trips. So, of course, that all spoke for scooters. But then we said, next step, yeah, but if we have to do a scooter, you don't want to do this kind of standard scooter. I mean, we already had these in combustion engines. But we said, we also want to make a statement that this is something new. This is something cool. This is fresh. You want to make a statement with this. But of course, you don't want to lose the utility and the practicability. And this is so how we worked around, and we did sketches and stuff. And finally, we came up with a design like a CE04. You know, we presented in 2017, I think, and people were really, I hope so, but people were kind of really electrified and they liked it. And so we really tried to bring it in production as close to the concept bike.
Is there any fixed date? Are the order books open if people want to go to their dealership yet, or it's still a little bit undefined?
I think our boss said this presentation will be this year.
Okay, well, we'll leave it at that for people who are keen. Here's just a thought question. It's interesting, Edgar, when you look at the world, because we just started this interview talking about, as you said, there's almost sort of two sides to how the world operates. There's the utility of motorbikes and scooters, etc., and then there's the leisure side. Is that something that also that you focus on as well? Because, you know, what have we seen as well in the last sort of, you know, 5-10 years? You also see certain economies, you know, mature to such a point that, you know, just as you could argue, when maybe people in an emerging economy are coming off the tractor, then people in developed economies want to get back on the tractor, because suddenly you go and buy yourself a nice farm near the Tegernsee and you've had a nice life in Munich, and suddenly, oh, how fun, I can ride in a tractor, I've done so well in life. And in the same way, it almost sounds like, yes, we almost want a bit more utility, a more rational approach in big, you know, developed first world cities. You know, whether you're in a Paris or you're in a Tokyo or wherever else, you want to have, you know, something which really functions, which gets you from A to B. Does that also mean then, as people are getting off the tractors in other economies, do they also want then a sport motorbike? Do they want a leisure motorbike? You know, is this something we're seeing happening? Yeah, let's look at a market like China. You look at an emerging economy like Indonesia, no shortage of scooters and bikes there by day, but are wealthier Indonesians also wanting to then just take to the open road on the weekends? Or is there still a stigma attached to it, do you think?
This question, what do you strive here, is, I think it's a very big and a very interesting issue. As I mentioned before, I used to live in India for several years, and that was interesting. I did bike design there. It was interesting to see how bikes are perceived in these communities or in these countries. It's a little bit, you can a little bit compare it like what we had in Europe after the war. Two-wheeler mobility was basically the cheapest way to have individual mobility, because these people, or many of these people, can't afford a car, obviously. So what they do is they go for a bike. They are not bikers, but they go for a bike because it's a cheap means of transport. The interesting thing is that these countries are developing very, very fast. There is also now still this kind of utility, two-wheeler mobility, but there is already new segments coming up, like real sports bike. They have small CC maybe, or middle-class CC, but they are real bikes. I mean, the riders are real bikers. They want to have a bike, not a commuting device. So that's very interesting. And these communities like India, like China, they are developing very, very fast. And they already have their own industries who do very interesting, very cool, and very, how to say, state-of-the-art design bikes already. And these things are moving very, very fast. That's interesting for us to see, because they are coming up almost like competitor bikes in a few years. That's a very interesting thing. But the transportation needs is, of course, also there. What you mentioned about the people going on to tractors, like in here, of course, here in this matured market, what we have here is you have lots of this segmentation, you have sub-segments, and you have sub-sub-segments in the meantime. Things are going so specific. And also we have a big greed for these heritage bikes, you know, for what I call this analog stuff. People love the analog crap here because it's so cool, you know, because all these smart devices are of everywhere. It's so standard that people, again, they love this mechanical luxury, what I call it, like mechanics is the luxury of the future, because it's kind of, you don't see it anymore. People love like turntables and tractors and vintage cars and stuff. If you go to India or China, I mean, the modernity isn't not yet really arrived in certain areas. So there is no postmodern, there is no heritage. They don't understand it.
I'm also fascinated by what you said. When you look at a market like India, which has also extraordinary know-how, because there is so much manufacturing, so many of the big players, of course, are present. There's also homegrown players as well. Do you think that's also then a challenge, of course, for respected markets, especially when it comes to markets which are very, very well known for two-wheel also, but maybe in particular four-wheel vehicles, a market like Germany that, many would argue that, of course, the German automotive industry was taken by surprise by Tesla, that it sort of came from out of not quite nowhere, but it emerged very, very quickly and challenged the security of all of these big German brands. Is that something also, you know, someone who's also in an industrial design world that you're mindful of, that actually, the next version of a CEO4, or the one that could even be hotter as the next scooter, could quite easily come out of a design studio in the middle of Mumbai and take the world by storm? Or, and I guess what I'm getting at is, do you think maybe Germany has learnt from this experience of, which many would say was an experience in arrogance?
I'm absolutely convinced that this is something which is absolutely taken serious. I really can't talk about the car industry because I have no big idea about cars. On the bike side, it's definitely like this. I think players like Royal Enfield, for example, which a few years ago they had their old Bullets and stuff. I mean, they bring out really interesting bikes, and they are state of the art. And also the design is state of the art, because these guys have learned a lot. And of course, there is also lots of European or American designers working there. Also, there is all these joint ventures. Think about Bajaj and KTM and Triumph, and also like TVS, where we are collaborating. These companies are absolutely serious companies. They are super professional, and these guys know exactly what they do. I mean, there's no doubt about keeping these companies, not taking them serious. Not for a second I would do this.
I want to go back to design signature. Your friends in the other part of the company who are doing four wheels, as I was saying a bit earlier, it's quite easy because you know what the grille of a BMW looks like as much as you know what an Audi looks like, or you know what a three-pointed star looks like. When it's BMW, you can rely on the badge. So that's instantly recognizable. But there aren't other components that I see coming down the highway that I know exactly what this is. Is that something that is worth correcting? Or as a designer, I guess what I'm interested in is the lineup. You know, there was that moment very, very early on when you could have looked at, an Audi and you knew, doesn't matter whether it was a two-door or it was a five-door Audi, you knew exactly what that vehicle was. Is that something that you're also sort of keen to clean up, particularly if we start to see that this whole e-scooter thing takes off, that there's a status to it, and I really want people from a block away to know that I'm coming down the street on a CEO4 or whatever its cousin's going to be?
For me, as a non-car specialist, if I look at companies like whatever, take any company, they have these cars in smaller size, in middle size, in bigger size, in very big size. So don't take me wrong, but it's basically a different thickness of slice of the same sausage, what my ex-boss used to say. On the bikes, I think it's pretty different because bikes are defined by the segments, and the segments, they play with different rules. So if you talk about the off-road bike or a sports bike or a touring bike, or a scooter, this is not the same sausage. This is very different sausages. So that means the define basically defines the mission of the bike, and the segment defines the mission of the bike, and the segment also defines the proportion and on all the different needs on the bike. So I do not see like you have different bikes and there is the BMW badge, which is kind of unifying it. I don't see this. That is more about the segmentation and the needs in the segment. What we really try to make the segment correct. I think the big challenge is to have a very wide variety of segments, what actually BMW has. And it's still, the credibility is there from the, let's say, from the R18 over the GTL, over the GS up to the RR. And they're all very credible BMWs. That means we want to be the best bikes in the segment, of course.
Last summer, Edgar, we saw a bit of a boom, of course, in mobility of all kinds, but people just going back on the good old Grand Tour. 1 week, super long weekends. And it seemed to me, this is just, of course, I was driving on four wheels, but I noticed more bikes out on the road. Do you think that there's going to be more of this now? Just as you were saying, from an urban side, people in the pandemic world, they want to have their own transport mobility. Do you think people have also discovered a new type of freedom when it comes to getting out on literally that wide open road?
You're definitely right. If you go like on a nice weekend or in summer, you go somewhere in the Alps or Dolomites or wherever in Austria, you see loads of bikes. This is definitely true. But I wouldn't say this is from last year. I mean, I see this for several years. I do it. I go to the mountains whenever possible. And you see lots of bikes there. And you're right. It's these typical long distance touring bikes, these kind of typical GSs, which they combine like comfort and thrill and weather protection and long distance driving and luggage capability. So these bikes, these modern bikes, they are very capable. They can do this. And also, at least in the last, let's say, 15, 20 years, perception of these people also changed. When I was a young guy, I mean, you went to the Dolomites, people didn't like the bikers. Now it's very different. I mean, people know that these bikers which come there, they can pay their room and they will have a nice dinner and they will have a nice wine. These people have money. So the perception really changed a lot. And now, especially in these areas here or in the mountains, it's totally normal and it's totally accepted. I wouldn't see it like being extraordinary the last summer, the pandemic summer. I think that was more maybe for people invested in money because they couldn't fly to Bahamas. So they had the money saved and so they went for a bike.
Let's bring it back to the city. Just when we think about the challenges facing our cities and how do you get from A to B and beyond that, how much of a conversation do you have when you sit down to design? Are you speaking to maybe your colleagues who are in charge of roadworks and the future of autobahns in Bavaria? And again, it's not just about the noise and it's not just about maybe those core sustainability issues, but just the future of where independent travel is going. Does that consume a lot of your time and the time of your designers as well? Or do you feel that in a way you have to operate in isolation? Because I think sometimes, we all sort of wonder, you know, couldn't these conversations be more joined up? And of course, you would imagine the German government, of course, depends on German industry, of course, to keep the coffers afloat. So do you feel there's a coordinated discussion going on when we think about the challenges, how we conquer getting around cities or getting between cities as well?
I mean, it's not, of course, this is not my personal thing to do these discussions, but I'm very convinced and I know that this is happening. I mean, we have a department here. They are talking to the politicians and they are talking to the authorities. And also we are part of this A7 meeting, you know, this motorbike consortium around the world. So they are, of course, doing lots of discussions. What is the future of mobility itself, electromobility, cars, bikes, whatsoever. For us, the good thing is we are somehow in between. You know, the bike department is kind of a small department compared to the big mothership, the cars. And for us, it's also very good because we can profit, of course, from the big car mothership in numerous ways. Like, first of all, let's just put the battery technology, which is given in the cars, of course. We have lots of scale effects here. We have lots of learnings here. But also what you mentioned in the political discussion and discussion with authorities. I think there is lots of things happening.
Edgar, to wrap things up, maybe it's just as a last question. Is the CEO4, again, if you can give away Bavarian BMW secrets, is this the start of something? Do you see this as the start of a series? And I'm somewhat of an old hand at this, but also a bit of a baby when it comes to understanding motorcycles. But there's such a strong design signature there. And I know we don't want to talk about re-slicing and resizing the sausage, but are we seeing a moment for BMW here to be launching a whole new family of scooters? You had the C1, which people loved, and then it went away. I guess they didn't love it enough. Maybe it was ahead of its time. Is this about you guys re-entering the market confidently? And I guess what I'm getting at is, will there be a family around it as well?
My press lady is sitting next to me. I'm not allowed to reveal any. I'm not allowed to reveal any secrets, Tyler. The point is, I'm very positive and convinced that there will be more to come, more vehicles which would fit in this slot somehow. Because I think there is, not only me, but we think there is really chances there on the electromobility side. And of course, these things will not go away. It's not, I mean, we have to deal with it. We have to live with it. We have to develop it. On your remarks on the C1, also the same thing. I can't say anything, but I can assure you there is still many, many friends of the C1 around here. I mean, it's a very contradictory thing, of course, but it was a very interesting concept and probably it was really before or ahead of its time.
My thanks to Edgar Heinrich, Chief Designer at BMW Motorrad, for joining us for this week's episode of The Chiefs. And tune in next week as we continue the theme of transport and hospitality with Qatar Airways GCEO, His Excellency Mr. Akbar Al-Bakr. This episode of The Chiefs was produced and researched by Paige Reynolds, edited by Steph Chungu, and assisted by Desiree Bentley. I'm Tyler Brulé. Thank you very much for listening.